The Philadelphia Inquirer, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Wednesday, April 13th, 1921. Old King Ball comes into his own today. Curtain rises on major league shows, and in eight cities throughout country, the familiar cry of "Batter up" will resound. By Gordon McKay. On various battlefields today in the United States, in Cincinnati, a smooth-faced bandit, disguised in a blue suit, a wad of fine cut and a strange tongue, will waddle before the multitude, doff his maroon fedora, and voice a monologue of these general specifications. Lees and gemmen, berries for day's game, for Phil Relfer, mise en suite, for New York, Tonin Smith, Merup. Whereupon the bandit in blue will fittingly hide his classic fizz behind a mask as he goes to his regular work, while thousands upon thousands will blow the cobwebs from their throats, free their language from its winter muffler, guide the giddy goober to its resting place, and gaze wonderingly at the hand-painted ham on the sandwich that nestles in their hands. You've said it. The baseball season is on.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to This Week in 1920s Baseball. This is Josh, a.k.a. Bucketfoot. Got Sweet Bread on the line. How you doing there, Sweet Bread?
I'm doing well. What's going on, Bucketfoot? Beautiful day for baseball.
It's a beautiful day for baseball. We've had a bunch of rainouts here in 2021. I'm like, what year is it? But in today, it's a beautiful day. And it actually is opening day of the 1921 season. So we are looking back at 100 years ago today at the opening day of our new season. So it's been a little while since we've recorded. We did cover some of the off-season moves. And yeah, it's exciting to finally play ball.
Yeah, here we are. I mean, I can't believe it, you know. 1921.
One of the remarkable ways, just to jump right in, that the season started was by Babe Ruth going 5-for-5 on opening day for the Yankees. So that's pretty remarkable. The article said that he actually, like, it's sort of like the article I found kind of like apologized. Like, it was like, well, there were, you know, like sort of like for why he didn't, none of the hits were home runs. It was like he was a little banged up, like his hand was a little sore. So that's why, you know, he only was able to bang a couple doubles and singles off the wall, but no home runs. They were kind of like apologizing for his.
Yeah. Like, how do you go 5-for-5?
Yeah, how do you go 5-for-5 on opening day?
Yeah, the 37,000 fans that packed, and I think back then that was a huge crowd, right? I mean, we nowadays we think of like what 50,000, 60,000 as being a big crowd, but back then that was monstrous.
It was a huge crowd, and there was so much pomp and circumstance, bands and like bouquets, and like they really were just like, this is the height of you know, really baseball madness and Babe Ruth mania kicking off here. And that's awesome that he went 5-for-5. He drove in a couple runs. He did not have the first home run of the year for the Yankees. That was, of all people, Aaron Ward, who was the third baseman. I don't know why Home Run Baker wasn't starting at third, because if you remember, he was signed in the offseason. But maybe he was banged up. He didn't get the opening day start. This dude, Aaron Ward, did. But he got two hits, and one of them was a dinger. Ping Bodie hit a triple. Wally Pipp with a double. I just love all these names. Chuck Fuster, our man Chuck Fuster, setting the table. The funny thing is, too, like we were talking. Okay, so they played the A's, and the A's were terrible. I didn't give you the score. It was 11-1. So obviously, the Yankees were going to probably like beat up on the A's. Ruth, five hits. Carl Mays, coming off of his controversial 1920, to say the least, pitched well. The A's were terrible. The great Frank Brazil.
I love that man.
I know. He was their cleanup hitter. We found him, if you remember, in the articles about the like independent leagues, and we thought his name was hilarious. Yeah.
Well, if you have a name like Frank Brazil, like automatic cleanup hitter. Like, it doesn't even matter if you're talented. Or
Well, he wasn't. He went 0-for-4.
But I can't believe, John. Like, I mean, I know we've said this a million times, but, like, you know, the hoopla surrounding Ruth and, like, the hype – right? And he's like basically an icon, even, you know, even this early in his career, that he just lives up to it and he exceeds it. I just, to me, it's like, it's unbelievable. Opening day, 5 for 5. And you shared that article to me. I mean, I looked at it and like his stats in opening day, like he hit like, I don't know, 450 or something throughout his career.
Big game player. Yeah. And the way that, right, you can just imagine the crowd just going nuts. You know, the first time he's up, second time, 5 times in a row, he gets a hit every time. And they said he did it really with just one good hand. So that's amazing. The article, there's an article, a full day's write-up on Sabre. I'll just read a little bit of it. So the game didn't begin until after 3:30 due to all the fanfare. Dignitaries had to be seated and flowers were presented, with all the melange being drenched pleasingly in the strains of music from a band. New York City's mayor was there. He launched the, I guess he threw the opening. I guess sometimes like the pitcher, I mean, the like first pitch would come, like the dignitary would just throw it from the crowd. So the way that they wrote it, John Hyland, the mayor, arose with due dignity and launched with a slight loss of dignity out in the general direction of Wally Chang. So, you know, maybe it wasn't as bad as Dr. Fauci's opening day or whatever, you know, ceremonial first pitch, but Mayor Hyland kind of threw a stinker of an opening first pitch, but it was a great, great start to the season for the A's. I mean, for the Yanks, the A's, not so great. I looked up a couple of the other interesting games from the day. Just some of these names, again, they're just so great. The Browns got the win with Urban Shocker getting the W over Stan Kowalewski. So the Indians coming off their World Series.
Shemoykin's finest.
Shemoykin's finest, Stan Kowalewski. I did notice that Sisler did get a couple hits in the win. So Sisler is starting off hot, hitting 500, I think, to start the season. Walter Johnson did not pitch well for the Senators. He got the loss to Sad Sam Jones of the Red Sox.
Yeah, maybe his career is on a decline here. Who knows?
Yeah, I know. Sad Sam is such a funny name. It always is listed as Sad Sam.
Sad Sam Jones. Sounds like a 1960s pop song. Yeah.
It really does. The guy named Dolph Luke, L-U-Q-U-E. That sounds like a guy I would have made up. He got the win for the Reds over Babe Adams, who's that very good pitcher for the Pirates. Pete Alexander, a.k.a. Grover Cleveland Alexander, got the win for the Cubs. And so, yeah, it's fun to see, like, who's the one other name I recognize? Oh, Joe Oshker. He's the one who pitched in that record-setting game that went 800 innings long.
Now, I noticed that that Baseball Reference lists saves here for the – but they weren't recording those at the time, right? That wasn't a statistic until like,
right. That's like someone
60s
just,
or 70s just, or something. Yeah,
some, yeah. 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 Way later. Someone just went way back and added these to BBRef. There weren't a lot of relievers used, but someone, yeah, did go back and figure out if the modern save rule was in place, who would have been awarded it. Yeah. So that is true. That is listed there.
Dolph Luck. Luke. Yeah.
that's a good one.
Luck Betts. These names are just too good.
They are. One of the other things I saw, not related to 1920s, but I just saw listed a couple of places that, because in yesterday on baseball Twitter and elsewhere, a couple of people mentioned that it was the opening day of Shibe Park in Philadelphia. So some people posted pictures and stuff. That actually opened in 1909. Do you remember the name of their stadium before Shibe Park? Pretty on the spot.
After Shibe Park?
Well, what state, where did they play before they built Shibe Park, the Philadelphia teams?
Baker Bowl?
Correct. And Shibe Park later became known as?
Connie Mack Stadium.
You are 2 for 2. I feel like a Ruthian start to the season. Sweet. Crush. Yeah. So, and people were posting pictures of Shibe Park because it really was beautiful to look at. It's really an awesome, it was an awesome structure and sort of sad that it came down. So, and it just so happens that I contributed to the Sabre book about the, I think it's the 50 greatest games in Connie Mack Stadium / Shibe Park history. So I was given the chance to choose. I picked a game that was Robin Roberts' 200th career win. So that's really why that game was noteworthy, because he was one of the great pitchers of that era for the Phillies. And he was my dad's favorite player. So it was fun to research and write about him. So yeah, look for that book from Saber. I don't think it's out yet. It's coming out soon. My book,
just Googled it. Yeah, I don't see it, but
my article about, oh yeah, you know what? It's not out yet. They asked me to write my bio for it, for the back. And I wrote that I was the co-host of the podcast this week in 1920s baseball. So.
All right.
Yeah, we're going to get some official ink in an official Saber publication. That's big time. That's big time for the pod.
Yeah, pod's going places.
I did another article about Babe Ruth. I think I mentioned that before in a book just called The Babe. That's about like the 50 greatest games of Babe Ruth's career. I did a game right up about the day he came back after the hot dog, the bellyache that shook the world, which was not why he was sick. But so I got to do some deep research into figuring out like what exactly happened with Ruth's controversial so-called stomach ailment. So
right, was that 1923? I'm trying to remember what year that was, because I remember you were doing research.
Yeah, I was laughing because I don't remember what year that was. Like I did all the research on it, and I cannot remember exactly what year. I believe you're right, 23. Yeah, that sounds right. You know how it is. You research something, on to the next thing. What else are you looking forward to here in the 1921 season? What other some?
I'm looking forward to. So you know, with the intro, we read that short excerpt from the Philadelphia Inquirer. So I'm looking forward to more of, not only Gordon Mackay's or Mackey. I'm not sure how to pronounce his last name. Writing, but all the, you know, all the great writing that we've experienced so far. I just can't believe some of these sports writers, just how eloquent they are and how funny they are, you know, compared to today.
I know it is fun to just for the pure literary value. It's fun to revisit those articles.
And you know, like, I feel like I remember his articles from like the previous year or, you know, seeing them previously and just really enjoying the writing. So I just Googled him and there's not a lot out there about him. But there is a short bio associated with Camden, New Jersey that was written about him, which is pretty interesting. So
we're going to give him his due.
Give him his due. Cause I don't know if he's ever really been given his due, and he's just a great writer. And if you Google him, it's Gordon and then it's Mackay. You'll have to look at Google like sports writer because there's a few recent ones, but you'll maybe find some great articles written by him. And then if you just go, if you just go into the archives, you can go into our archives here on our website and you can look up, the Philadelphia, because he worked for the Philadelphia Inquirer, he worked for the Philadelphia Times, the Philadelphia Record. And he wrote like quite a number of articles on baseball, boxing, football. And he extensively wrote about the Pottsville Maroons, of course, are that 1925 NFL champion, not champion, depending on who you talk to. The NFL still does not recognize them. There's actually a great book. I think we own it called The Breaker Boys by David Fleming that was published in 2007. That's all about the Pottsville Maroons. Of course, that's, you know, it's a local town to us. Just in a remarkable season in 1925.
Yeah, that's a crazy story.
Yeah, such a crazy story about how they, you know, they played basically an exhibition game after the season was over, and because it was in another team's territory, the NFL decided that it was that they could strip their title. Incredible, just from a football perspective. The fact that they were able to basically win the NFL championship in their inaugural season, the fact that the town raised the money for their the fees to join the NFL, the whole thing is just fascinating. Just the history of what Breaker Boys are, from that area. Like there were 10-year-old kids that would work in the coal mines. Just all sorts of great stuff in that book. So, Gordon Mackey, he was born in 1877, started working in journalism in Boston in 1895. But when he came to Philadelphia in 1909, that's really where you get a lot of the great sports articles. He worked for about 25 years in the Philadelphia era, area, and like I said, wrote extensively. So really love his writing, and he was called the king of baseball writers in the Philadelphia area.
That's cool. I'm gonna put some. Yeah. I'll put some links up too on the on our Twitter page, so you can find us on Twitter at 1920.
Yeah, so we'll have to keep an eye on him rest of the season if he writes any great articles on the Philly teams, of course.
I was gonna say, do you think maybe his prose was elevated not by the greatness of his team, but by the lack thereof?
Possibly. I mean, you know, even in all the great writing that we see in these sports writers at the time, I think even he kind of stands out a little bit with how eloquent. I don't know really know his background in terms of where he went to school or his training, but
my theory is impressive. That yeah, he had to get people to read about the Phillies in the '80s, and so he yeah. he really had to rise to the occasion, because you were not following them for the pennant chase. They were so bad. Did you happen to see the outcome of the Phillies opening day on this first day?
You know, I got it up right now. Pretty good game. Yeah.
Yeah, it was, first of all, it went 2 hours and 50 minutes, which is like the longest possible game in 1920s baseball. It went to extra innings. They lost to the Giants on a – okay, they were the home team, so it wasn't a walk-off, which would have been very exciting, but it was an 11th inning inside the park home run by High Pockets Kelly. That's pretty great.
That is great.
So High Pockets hit a inside the park home run in the top of the 11th to give them the 10 set. It was tied at 7, and the Phillies got one back in the bottom of the 11th. But they
it looks like your boy Frankie Frisch. He had a pretty good game too.
Frankie had three hits, and he scored on that inside the parker as well. So That's a pretty exciting way to win the opening day game, is with a inside the park home run on the top of the 11th. So
especially in the Baker Bowl, I mean, that would have been. I mean, I thought the Baker Bowl was tiny.
Yeah, no. Well, this would have been in Shibe Park, right? Because Shibe Park was already here at that point.
I thought the Phillies played in Baker Bowl for a while, still, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, 1909 is when. The stadium opened, but was that at that point, that was where the A's played? Yeah, I think you're right. So the stadium was in existence, but it wasn't their home park yet. But yeah, that was just a pretty neat thing to see. Yeah. So Sisler, I wanted to say too, had two hits against Kowalski. It was a double and a triple. So he already has five total bases after the first day of the year. So
machine.
Yeah, Sisler is a machine, and he's off to a great start. The Phillies, not so much. I want to see real quick who did do well for the Phils, because they scored a lot of runs. So somebody on the Phillies must have had a good game.
Russ Wrightstone.
Who the heck is that? He was their third baseman.
Bruggy. Yeah. Even Huck Betts got into it. Yeah.
Who are these people? Oh, Casey Stengel was the leadoff man. That's amazing. I always forget that he was a ball player for the Phillies before he became a famous manager. Johnny Rawlings, who we love his name, even though he's terrible. He got three hits. Hey, way to go, Johnny Rawlings. Cy Williams, we know him. He's a good slugger. Irish Musial. Russ Wrightstone is a very good baseball name. Dots Miller. Yeah, everyone had two hits.
Every name. Yeah, just
every name
all
is
up great. And down. All up and down.
The pitching was very bad. Oh, it was Phil Douglas. Isn't Phil Douglas, isn't it like Spittin' Phil? He had a good nickname. Phil Douglas. So yeah, off to a good start in the opening day season. It's almost April 15th, which is notable in baseball history for what reason? I'm just quizzing you today.
Is it Jackie Robinson Day?
That's the day. April 15th, 1947 was the day that Jackie played his. So I guess that wasn't opening day. This is obviously outside of our area of expertise.
Was that still the opening day of that season at that time?
It was. I mean, that makes sense, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I would think so, maybe. Yeah.
I'd be curious to learn a little bit more about that actual day. But, you know, it just, of course, catches any baseball fan's eye as one of the most interesting days in Major League Baseball history, the great Jackie Robinson. And I wanted to tell you a story that, and just share it with the listeners that I don't think I shared with you before. I just like to tell it. When I was in seventh grade, I did a History Day project. Are you familiar with History Day? Did you have that where you were?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you would do, you research a topic, you would try to do primary source research, you know, and do your, like, really teach kids to be, you know, to do the real work of history, not just read a textbook and regurgitate it, but to do your own primary source research. And then you would do like a play or write a paper or make like a, some sort of presentation about it, project of some sort. So anyway, my friends and I chose Jackie Robinson as the topic of our History Day presentation in seventh grade. And of course, I was a baseball nerd at that point even. And, you know, this was, what, 1988. So it was not super easy to do primary source research because, you know, nothing was online. So, but we were really, like, we would go and just track down any player we could think of who might have played with Jackie Robinson that we could find their contact information. And we would write them letters and ask them about it. So one of them who wrote back to us was Richie Ashburn, because we figured we could find Richie's contact information because we knew him as the announcer for the Phils. So we just wrote a letter to the care of the station. We had a whole bunch of questions, and he wrote back. He answered every question about what it was like to play against Jackie and what his thoughts were on what he had to experience and what his impressions of him were as a ball player. I still have the letter. I think it's actually at my dad's house, but it was so cool. We sent like self-addressed stamped envelopes, you know, to get everyone to try to respond. And the other funniest story to me is, like, we wrote to Yogi Berra, I think just care of the Yankees. I don't know why, how we just somehow had an address for Yogi Berra. And so Yogi Berra wrote back, but apparently forgot to include the letter. He just sent back an empty self-addressed envelope. So we were kind of disappointed, but in retrospect, that's like a better Yogi Berra story than had he actually included the letter. Right?
Such a Yogi Berra story. Yeah.
Such a Yogi Berra story. And then the other thing that happened was we get a call from the office. You know, you're in seventh grade and you get the intercom and says, you know, Josh Berg, come report. And everyone like thinks you're in trouble, you know? Everyone's like, ooh. And I'm like, oh man, why am I in trouble? So I go down to the office and they're like, there's a phone call for you. And I was like, all right. I pick up the phone and it's Rachel Robinson, Jackie's wife.
Unbelievable.
We had written to the Jackie Robinson Foundation, of which she was, I don't know what her title was, but in charge of, and with these questions about the project, and we listed our school's name and stuff, and she called us back at the school, just like a bunch of kids and like 12-year-olds in Pennsylvania, and she was the loveliest person and answered all of our questions and gave us so much like insight about what he was like and what, you know, how, what that time was like and what, you know, her experiences were. And we just had like the greatest conversation. And we got like a perfect score on our History Day project. We got to go to the state championships, got to stay in the dorm at Penn State. And anyway, so I'll always remember April 15th, 1947 as like, you know, the date of Jackie's debut. And then just those, my little personal connection to Mrs. Robinson and some of the players who played with him. So I thought
great
you
were story. I love it. I want to see that that History Day presentation too.
We made like a little we made a baseball field. It was like a baseball field, and then we made hurdles, and we like little like track and field hurdles, and so we placed them between the bases to symbolize all the extra barriers that Jackie had to overcome. So wow. That was one of my friend's dad was really handy. He made all these little hurdles out of the wood. My dad was very good at research. He helped us do all the research part. So, yeah.
Oh, that's great. I love History Day. I was actually a judge for History Day last year.
Whoa, you were?
Yeah.
I want to be a judge. Sign me up.
I'll loop you in next year. How's that sound?
Yeah, loop me in.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. That's good stuff. Well, we will hopefully be back with you sooner rather than later as we follow the beginning of the exciting season here. Off to a good start. And
they're hitting the ground running here for the Yanks, that's for sure.
Yes, hitting the ground running.
Sultan of SWAT.
And look for us on 1920s Baseball on Twitter. And, you know, give us your... money.
Later.